Tonight we launch Inside Pale Eyes by Dave Ward, a long-standing friend of the festival. Dave is a poet and an author with poems in over 100 anthologies, as well as having his poems broadcast on television and radio. He was a visiting writer in residence at Nanyang University, Singapore, and has toured throughout the Far East, in particular northern China. Pale Blue Eyes is illustrated by drawings from Brian Biggs. Many of you will know Brian as the artistic director of the Blue Coat here. But in parallel to art administration and curating, he is an artist in his own right and has contributed drawings and writings to numerous publications. Dave and Brian are joined by A. Jackson, a musician, pamphleteer. He describes himself as an anarcho-Buddhist. He's also a poet, published by Headland Press. And I would like, first of all, to introduce Brian.
Right, thank you very much, Stuart. And on behalf of Blue Coat, I'd like to welcome you all here this evening and really just to congratulate Stuart on what's been a really fantastic festival. We launched it here this year with Will Self, which was, if you were there, it was a pretty amazing event. Not everyone enjoyed it, but it was very provocative and very much of the times we're in. And I just thought it was one of the best events that they've done at the festival. We had Ben Ockrey here, we had lots of people here, really memorable nights, and so congratulations again to Writing on the Wall. And congratulations to Dave Ward for this evening. I'm not going to say anything other than these are my drawings. And I've done a few drawings before for issues of Smoke, which Dave might talk about in a minute. The poetry collection that occasionally comes out. Is it occasional or is it?
It's pretty occasional.
Pretty occasional. So we always had a sort of working relationship, and when he mentioned this new book of short stories, he said, would I illustrate it? And I said, well, I won't illustrate it because I haven't got time, but I do a drawing every day. And I've done that for, this is the seventh year. So there was plenty to choose from. And Dave came around one night and spent some time going through them and selecting ones which he thought would somehow amplify or echo the stories in the book. And that's what we've done. He selected a number of them and then from that reduced it down to what would work in the context of the book. So what you'll see scrolling through when we start the evening is the drawings that are in the book, and then it goes into other ones that I've just picked at random because I thought they sort of might fit. So you might see some unusual juxtapositions of story and image. If it's distracting, just look away or close your eyes, because Dave's got a wonderful reading voice and you might just get lulled into listening to the story, and I don't want you to think, what's that got to do with it? Because really, they're just a bit of backdrop. I think that's all I want to say. If you're interested in the drawings, you can look on Instagram. I'm called Ink and Spit, because that's what they're done with. And I put a few on there. And next, is it the 7th to the 9th of June, I'm showing some drawings in the Fabric District, which is the fashionable new name for what is the back of TJ Hughes. It's a great festival which John Hyatt organises, and it's on for 3 days. And I've got some of my drawings will be shown on sort of poster sites around the area, so have a look at those. But Dave, I'm going to hand over to you now, and here we are. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. Coming out in the rain. I think rain is a theme running through these stories. As Brian says, we've known each other for decades. I think we've stopped counting. Brian first contributed artwork to Smoke in 1984. I've been checking the records this afternoon. Around 2005, I saw some enigmatic and haunting artwork featured in the big issue and wondered what it was, and read the caption underneath and found out these were indeed by Brian. These were the early Spit and Ink drawings. We used a set in Smoke around then, and again more recently in 2016. And now, as Brian's described, for Inside Pale Eyes. As Brian said, we spent a very long evening sorting through all of them, and for days afterwards, I felt as I'd if I'd been drawn into this dreamscape, because I kept seeing actual people looming towards me in the street who looked uncannily like Brian's drawings. And I think that Brian must have a facility for remembering faces and people and places that then translating to drawings when he does them at night. The writing in the book is similar. They're short prose pieces capturing half-glimpse people, lives, locations, incidents, real and imagined. Hawkwood have very carefully put the line at the front of the book that says the characters in this book bear no resemblance to people living or dead. So that's the legal get out. The writing predates Brunt Boggart. For those of you who know Brunt Boggart, that's all set in a rural setting. Well, they were written in the late 1980s, early 1990s, when the Windows Project had an office in Canning Street. So there's a lot of that atmosphere of the slightly decaying Georgian quarter that we all know and love. They also recall life in Elsinore Heights, wonderfully named Tower Block in Halewood. We've called it a fractured narrative because fragments knock together, link up, connect, drift apart, but I would argue that reflects real life more closely than conventional novelists and filmmakers' narrative arc. So it is a book launch. The books are on sale for only a fiver each. That's a markdown price. There are some copies of the original Hawkwood edition of Brunt Boggart, for those of you who have not seen it, and indeed some copies of the last issue of Smoke that Brian contributed to. We're very pleased to have A. Jackson with us tonight. I've very fond memories of A.'s band Cheaper Sprawl, even though he asked me not to mention them, but I thought they were wonderful. Aid, as has been said, is a poet in his own right. His collection, Late Night Sister Songs, and I previously edited the magazine Back to the Machine Gun. So, round of applause for Aid.
Thanks, Dave. I'm going to play a couple of songs that hopefully complement the themes of Dave and Brian's book. This first one is... It's actually an old Liverpool seagoing song, and I've sort of taken some liberties and modernised the words a bit. When first I came to Liverpool, on all my money gone, I've been drunk as drunk could be. This life's breeze, this life's calm, my mouth so dry, my head so sore, a man must be mad to make up his mind to go see once more. It's midnight's night with crystal eyes, too gone. My watch was new, gold, St. Christopher too. When I woke up, they both gone. Rolling the streets, cathedral bells, seagulls left, hookers roared. There goes Jack, the sailor man. He'll be off to sea once more. I found myself down on Paradise Street, talking to Rapper Brown. I asked him if he'd take me on. He just let me up and down. Dark as his day, ain't that what they say? I know you, I'm keeping score. I'll give you a chance, there's a favor I want. If you're not shy, break your law. bound for the Arctic Sea. The cold winds to blow through the ice and the snow, Jamaica rum free. I watch myself from the foggy shore, blood in my eyes, living no more. How can it be if I'm already dead? I'm off to sea once more. She's seen the sea too much recently. She means so much to me. Television makes her feel tea. Dig deep for them out on the street. She's sweet. Hey, but she's angry. She can't have everything. And she finds it funny. She don't believe in it. Real. It's all about feel, she said. Don't you find it funny? It's the fakers who get all the credit. Catherine Street, one way. All those lights that go beneath the wheels of the cars. Sea floors beneath the streets and bars.
woman holds out her baby. She asks for change, for milk, for clothes. Nothing changes. The baby does not know. She sleeps at peace in her mother's outstretched arms. The baby knows everything. Waking, she sees the scornful faces, the pitying faces, the pitiful faces, the faceless faces that turn away, that lurch towards her, the eyes that pry, that pierce, that do not realise they see. The baby screams. She needs changing. Her mother pleads for change. Her mother screams. The baby holds her in her arms. They hold each other. The scream is one. There is no change. The endless rain. Grey faces, grey streets. A sullen river of endless pain. The walls of the cathedral hug them close as motherhood. The walls are harsh, a harsh grey stone. The baby feels the pain is feeding her, unyielding hunger. Her mother pleads again. There is no change, only hunger, only rain. Tower block, no one can hear you scream. And even if they do, no one knows where it's coming from as the sound ghosts around the girders, flickers from floor to floor, but you're the only one living there that owns a Stratocaster. They come down straight away, clattering and complaining to your door. Skin rams home the jack and runs his fingers across the fretboard to unlock the rift that aches inside him, then sits back and waits to see who will knock first. The guitar's taut strings sing a whispering echo. Nobody comes. No one was listening. Nobody cares. He plugs the radio back in and slashes the DJ's smoky voice with silent, frenzied chords. As midnight hits, Max sits in the radio station's one-eyed shack. His mouth is dry, his temples throb. Every night it's the same. He watches the clock, watches the second hand sweep towards the top, right on time, right on cue. That invisible moment as one day chases into the next. Max straddles time, opens his line, whispers grit and velvet down the throat of the microphone, then flips a switch and yawns that long drag of air fed by knotted nerves. As the rhythm of the first track down cracks the channels, Max relaxes, grins and unwinds. His head stops beating as he drains a glass of pure ice water. From now on in, he wirewalks each sweet moment. Out in the night, trucks roar and hammer, taxis swoop and cruise. Max keeps on feeding them the rhythm and the blues. Booze flows from bottle to glass to gullet to hot sizzling piss in the shebeens and parties. Back alleys and bedsits, back kitchens and flop houses strewn across town. Max scores the soundtrack to a movie he never sees as the long hours drift into the all-night shift, breaking the sounds as the city sleeps. The dreamers wake, the ravers dream. For all you lonely lovers and all you loving loners, this is where you get connected. Just pick up the phone. Albie sticks his mop back in the bucket. The dirty water slops over the top, splashing over his boots. He wants to wash his hands again. Sighs. The sign above his head tells them he's on the seventh floor, seven floors down to his cubbyhole in the entrance hall, seven floors up to his flat to the top. Here he is on the middle floor of the middle block of the towers that glower like lookout posts at the edge of the estate. Below him, the concrete stairs still steam where he's wiped the balding mop across them. Above him, the smell of dog piss, vomit, and God knows what. It makes him feel dirty. He wants to wash his hands. Rubs them on the back of his overalls. He could knock on a door and ask to use the bathroom, but then it would be, Albie, have you come to fix the sink? Or, Albie, where'd you get to yesterday when I got stuck in the lift? He flicks at an empty aerosol can spent on graffiti that no one will read here in the dankness of no man's land. A shadowy desert of concrete and brick. Water, water everywhere. He can hear it trickle and drip. He wants to wash his hands. A door bangs somewhere above him. The wind whines ghostly through the lift shaft's creaking cables. Slowly he takes off his gloves, dips his hand into the mop bucket's turgid water, wringing them gently like a cloth. And he draws them out, shakes them, wipes them again across the back of his overalls. From somewhere below, somewhere above, skin is tuning his guitar. The sound slips and slithers like liquid lightning along the gridwork of girders that is the skeleton of the block. Albie waits for his hands to dry before pulling the gloves back on. As he heaves the bucket up the next flight of stairs, the water with its tang of bleach and detergent that masks the smell of piss sloshes out across his boots again. He wants to wash his hands. She shuffles aboard the bus, shaking away the last drops of rain that still cling to her as a reminder, ignoring the signs, choking a rosary of cigarette smoke, repeating a toneless litany over and over again. It's cold and it's dark, so I don't want to go out, so I get on the bus, okay? Okay, the second okay, defiant, emphatic, almost another voice answering the first. It's cold and it's dark, so I don't want to go out, so I get on the bus, okay? Okay. At the back, a man with a flat cap pulled down tight on his head begins to sing like a broken jukebox of battered country hits. The passengers around him shuffle in their seats, move further forward, closer to the door. They'd love to think he's just another drunk, but the voice is too firm, too true. If he was on stage or on television, they'd burst into applause. But here on the bus, two seats away, he's too close for comfort. As each fragment of song floats seamlessly into the next, and his eyes lock with theirs, a stare that insists, listen to this, listen to this. It's cold and it's dark and I don't want to go out. At the next stop, the man in the cap makes his way down the gangway, bowing and blowing kisses. He vaults lightly onto the pavement and the bus falls silent. But before anyone can vent their relief in pent-up laughter, they see him standing in the flickering limelight of the bus shelter, still bowing and waving but laughing at them. At the back, one half-hearted joker tries to pick up the song's last line and carry it on, but his voice hovers, feebly cracks and fades. Uneasily, the passengers raise a smile, fall back to scrutinising the grimy darkness that weighs against the windows. I don't want to go out, so I get on the bus. Okay. Okay. Max staggers home, dizzy with words, with sounds, with silence. Now the streets are empty with all the people who have not been listening to his voice on the radio. He never knows who they are. Sometimes they phone him, sometimes hang up, a click, a self-satisfied purr. Sometimes ring in and beg to be connected with all the others who are listening and not listening, all the sleeping lovers and all the loving sleepers. Connection is everything. But in the empty street, damp newspapers wrap round his ankles and tail lights trail through the glistening mist. Dawn slips dull between beckoning street lamps. Rooftops glower above him and sullen subways yawn. An unseen hand clutches at his coat sleeve. Max stares back into the face that stares back at him. This is not someone who has sat alone listening to his show or drizzled out the dog end of a party checking out his sounds. Here is someone who has no radio, has no telephone to dial in to tell him how lonely he is. Connection is everything. This is someone who is not connected. Max's shadow dances the shadow one hazy movement. The voice in the throat clears to speak, but there are no words, no connection, no direction. He slogs his way up the concrete stairs, following the drip of the leaky mop bucket. He can tell when Albie's been there before him. Always the stairs, never the lift. The lift's never working, except as he climbs the stairs, he always hears it winding past him. The voices inside laughing. If he does ever use the lift, nobody ever laughs. They all stare dumbly at the walls. He slogs on to the top, so he can make his way down again, floor by floor, a slow helter-skelter, knocking on the doors. Rent! He knocks again. Rent! The door opens slowly, puzzled. What? Rent! It's you. Yes, I know. That's right, it's me, Rent. But, I know, but you've had the letter. You have to take it down the rent office now, or the social's paying it direct. I'm not coming round anymore, the rent man. Too many muggings. Didn't say that, the letter, but that's what it meant. But nobody ever mugged me. They all knew me. Knew half the time the bag was empty because I let you all off too easy. No need to mug me when it's still in everyone's pockets. One more reason for the letter. No more rent men. But why am I here? I always come. Every week, same day, same time, the rent man. I always come up the stairs, knock on the door, say hello, see you're okay. What's different? Why change? Only the letter. No bag, no book, only me. That's what I say to the old ones, so as not to worry them. Only me. Forget the rent. Only me. Going far, stranger. He turns around. The sound of the voice is spiky, mean. Trails off into manic, high-pitched laughter that stops suddenly, dead. On the back seat sprawls a thin-faced kid, lizard eyes fixed, fondles a knife between long fingers. One hand is bandaged, seeping blood. There's only the two of them up here on the top deck as the bus bounces its dream glide out through town. The neon fades as they hit the side roads, long avenues lit by sodium, muted and dull. The man says nothing. What is there to say? He's not sure how far he's going anyway, never been this route before. The voice comes again, edged with sarcasm. I said, going far, or didn't you? Here. Graffiti on the seats, anger and desperation, lust and accusation. Exaggerated diagrams clamour for attention. Snakes tattooed all up the kid's arm. They writhe and twist and hiss to the knotting and unclenching of white knuckle fists as a racking cough hacks out a banshee wail, unbroken pain. The man rises to his feet, then sinks again, one hand still clinging uselessly to the bell cord that would connect him to the driver downstairs. But it does not ring. The bus rolls on past the next empty, stop. The kid advances, knife outstretched, eyes glinting dead metal. The man recoils, judders for the cut. The kid reaches inside the studded leather jacket draped across taut shoulders, still uttering the babbling scream. Rips open the front of a faded check shirt. One pale tit lets fall. Touch this, stranger. The gagging voice pleads, suck on this. In a half-lit cafe at the end of a derelict street, a girl is dancing on a small raised stage. The cafe is empty. The table's heavy with dust and silence. Shadows come and go to sit hunched over one cup of coffee, a slow cigarette. Pages from old newspapers slither to the floor. The girl dances on, her hair tied back in a dun-coloured scarf, her pleated skirt swaying casually. She dances as if she's waiting for a lover she has never met, but no one ever comes. The occasional strangers take no notice of her. The pot-bellied man behind the bar continues as if she is not there at all. He mops the floor and wipes the top of the counter, but always the dust returns, spinning in the spectral light beside the curtain stage. He runs a hand across his balding head and rubs his greasy hair, tugs at his braces and starts to whistle. As he whistles, he gazes across at the stage. The girl is dancing faster now, her pale lips twisting into a smile. The man busies himself, polishing glasses, stacking plates, emptying tarnished ashtrays into the depths of a grimy bin. He whistles faster as he works, and the girl dances quicker too, tapping her hands and clicking her heels in a flurry of rhythm. The man locks and bolts the door, closes the blinds. He's stopped whistling now. He takes a broom and slowly sweeps the empty stage. There is no one there at all. She will come here, to this space, to this room, to this anywhere, which is her own time, in any place. She licks her lips, places one knowing finger firmly between them. An ocean of energy grows restless inside her. She can feel its tides tugging her this way, this way. The room slopes away from her, out of her reach, an easy loping beat, drawing her out, twining her in, onwards towards an inevitable end. There is a darkness inside her eyes into which she swims, glistening and beautiful. She slips from her own embrace, sliding like a newborn child to walk as if naked in a crowded street, where strangers will kiss her, will touch her, will love her, their faces like clowns, like mirrors, like masks, will breathe unspoken in her body's sunlit shadow. There are voices in her fingertips, begging with her, pleading, drawing the darkness to dance across her skin, a curtain of satin, a veil of silk, washing her body with the sureness of milk. And she cries out, a muted whisper trapped behind her teeth, then vital and wild as she lets the sound roll, welling and bleeding to steal into corners, spreading warmth to this room. And she touches the dust as the dust touches her, each shifting mote a skein of bright rainbows as out in the street warm rain soaks her skin as she dances beyond herself, arms reaching out, clutching the aura, gathering her in. To this room, to this space, to this nowhere, which is her own time, in any place, here she will. As she gets off the bus, she lights another cigarette, tries to light another cigarette. Her fingers fumble its shape to her mouth, jabbing it between the red of her lips. The matches slip as she tries to strike one. The flame goes out, blown out by the slipstream fumes of the bus as it retreats down the street. She doesn't know where she is. The street is dark, the lamps are broken, unlit. Watching. She knows when someone is watching. Someone is watching her now, but nobody is here. An empty street. She strikes a match. She lights her cigarette, clings to it like a stick for protection to guide her, its glowing tip the only light as its ash spills down her dress. The sky's full of rain. I can feel it in my head in a cloud shaped like pain. The pain has led her here. She is not in the room where the pain lives with her, beside the empty bed where she never sleeps. It's cold and it's dark, so I don't want to go out. So I get on the bus. Okay. Okay. But the bus has gone. Its lights have gone. Its warmth has gone. The other passengers who looked at her but did not look at her were there. But are not here now, nobody here now. But someone is watching her. She can feel the eyes. She knows most people do not want to see her. Look away. Well, they stare and she knows. Now no one is here, but she knows. The road slopes away. Uneven paving stones slipping between the terraced houses down towards the river. Waiting like a darkness, like a stillness at the bottom of the hill. She cannot see it, but she knows it's there. She can feel its tug, feel that chill. Maybe it's only the river that watches. She shrugs, shivering, going that way. But no, she knows there is someone else. Not eyes behind the curtains, they don't count, they're always there. No, there's someone else there, out here, with her. Someone in this street. She stops, her feet miss a beat. Are those the echoes of other footsteps? Is someone keeping time with her? She turns to look, a swirl of smoke from her cigarette stub. There's no one here. Distant sirens, a river boat's moan. She hugs herself. She would like someone to hold her. Anyone would do, just to be held. She looks again. Her eyes pulse pain like the pain in her head. She smudges red lips with the back of her sleeve. In the doorway, in the darkness, where there is no one, where there is nothing, there is someone there. It does not surprise her. She is not startled. She always knows when someone is watching, but she did not expect the eyes that see her without seeing her, which look at her and through her and do not see, but see everything. And she wasn't expecting the touch of his body, so moist, so warm, like a day-old baby, but fully grown, wrapped in long darkness, like a cloak. Like a coat to protect them as they dance in the silence, in the darkness. He takes her to another place. She does not know where she is now, though she did not know where she was before. They dance through darkness, through hidden walls, through gardens of light, to and fro, feeling the salt, the oil, the flow, till her skin seems to glow. They dance through cities beneath this city, where sunken rivers run. They go there, he takes her. She is not alone. Thank you.
Mr. J, won't you come on down? All your friends, they've been waiting around, I know. You just wanna blow. I love everybody still, she said.
Thank you very much, you three. Where's Brian gone? Okay, thank you very much. That was enchanting. That was dark. And actually, I think it does tie into a theme that's developed through the festival, through this month of May. And I think it was angry as well, but it was delivered with such poise and such lightness that perhaps You get to the anger through lightness, and perfectly complemented. Don't worry, Brian. There was a juxtaposition can be good as well as a contrast, and I think the images certainly brought something to the evening as well. So, one more round of applause, please. So Inside Pale Eyes is now officially
on sale for the first time. Where else are you selling it in Liverpool, Dave? If people.
From nowhere.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so. So, if you get a copy tonight and you like it, then you can tell your friends it's available from News from Nowhere. Thank you very much for coming to Writing on the Wall. Our final event is tomorrow evening. And it is in our programme. You will see that it's an event that focused on polystyrene of X-ray specs and her legacy and a recent biography of her. So thanks very much for coming this evening, and thank you very much for coming to the festival. Cheers.